will start my talk with the half presentation, half blank wall, because I didn't have enough time to prepare from the very beginning. And actually, the PowerPoint part is a kind of reiteration of some stuff I did last week, just to introduce to those of you which were not present in the talk last week, what kind of things we are doing. And then on the blackboard I will present new stuff. So this, I just want to mention that this effective field theory approach was originally introduced by Walter Goldberger and Ira Rothstein, and about 4 or 5 years ago. And we find it a very nice approach to solve problems in classical physics. And all the discussion has to do with classical physics without any quantum corrections. So the outline of my talk is as follows. I will show you briefly how to derive Einstein Hofmann Lagrangian, and it is yes, I think that this improved derivation in a sense that this is the most economizing way to get this result. And Einstein Hofmann Lagrangian is just first post-Newtonian correction to the Newtonian Lagrangian Newtonian physics. Okay, then I will introduce unrealistic scalar toy model, and using this scalar toy model, this will go to the blackboard. Okay, using the scalar toy model, I will explain what is it actually, redundant operator, and then I will show you example of classical normalization rule flow. and finally, this is the main goal of the talk. I want to consider finite size effects, and it's actually work in progress. Finite size effects, I mean deformation of compact objects. Okay, and finally, I guess I will not have time to discuss results in both demonstrations. Okay, so let us consider post-Newtonian approximation. We have to do with two bodies, and for simplicity we take them with two identical bodies, and R as denotes now Fish-Porch ratio, or size of the compact object, and capital R denotes the typical distance between the bodies, and we take the limit when RS is much less than the distance between the bodies. So in this case we have two widely separated scales, and once we have two widely separated scales, we have a very well-developed tool in the framework of effective field theory in classical physics to cope with such system. So let me consider evolution of these two bodies around each other. Okay. So originally, Walter Goldberger and Ira Rothstein derived this Lagrange, showed how to derive this Lagrangian using effective field theory, and actually Einstein, Infeld, and Hofmann derived this Lagrangian in 38 or something like that. So, VL theorem relates kinetic energy and potential energy, namely V square scales as Gm over R, and since Gm is just Schwarzschild radius, we get our small parameter is just Rs over R for V square, and this is one post-Newtonian order. Okay, so there are typical lengths in the problem, short lengths, Rs, I mean physics which happens from the scale of the size of our compact objects, the potential length scale R, which is much bigger than Rs, and some radiation length scale, which is R over V, and many, actually R over V is just period of evolution. And the corresponding fields we denote by G mu nu, namely field which collects all short length or all short length scales, Rs, capital H mu nu, and lowercase h mu. Okay, now since radiation in the post-Newtonian expansion appears at 2.5 order, post-Newtonian order, and we are actually interested in first post-Newtonian correction to the Newtonian Lagrangian, so we can neglect radiation modes, and our system is actually the first post-Newtonian correction is conserved. And we want to derive this point particle Lagrangian for this system. Okay, so first of all, time special derivative of potential modes, special derivative of potential modes scale as 1 over r times h, and time derivative, since time in this problem scales as period of evolution, and this is just r over v, so we get dhdt or time derivative scales as v over r times h, and in the case of radiation field, just to comment about it, both special derivative and the time derivative scale as v over r times h, namely radiation modes are on shell and potential modes are off shell. But now discussion we will neglect this small h. So as a first step, we replace actually both two bodies. These two bodies we replace by point particles, point-like particles. So to first order, we have just only mass term, and in order to account for finite size effects and for the fact that actually we are dealing with finite size bodies, we have to include infinite number of terms. All of them are parameterized by scale. I mean this. Constants like mass and other constants scale with RS, the short length scale, just as this is standard procedure in quantum field theory. When we integrate short length scale, all coefficients, all Wilsonian coefficients scale with this short length scale. And in general, we have infinite number of terms. Right now, I suppress them, but you'll consider this finite size operators later. Okay. So at this level, our metric G, so these two bodies are weakly coupled now by these potential modes. Okay, and this potential Lagrangian bulk action for these potential modes is just the standard Hilbert-Einstein-Hilbert action. And this time, this G contains, since we integrated out short degrees of freedom, this G contains only potential modes and radiation modes, which will be irrelevant for our discussion. Okay, and since we are far enough from the horizon, both capital H and small h are weak, and we can expand now all this action in weak field approximation. And since we are interested in the Lagrangian, which describes the evolution of these compact objects, we have to integrate out as a next step this capital H. So this is actually next step, but before applying it, we suggest to use the following change of variables. Okay, Kaluza-Klein-like change of variables. I call it change of variables because actually we do not reduce over time. We still have time in the problem, but time in this problem is somehow outstanding because evolution, time evolution is very slow. Okay? Therefore, it suggests that once we apply this ansatz, and in this ansatz, time plays special role. It's a kind of reduction over time, but we don't actually reduce over time. We can organize our perturbation analysis in a more convenient way. So right now it's just change of variables, like the same kind of change of variables when we pass from Cartesian to polar coordinates. And first let us rewrite this action in terms of these variables. So we get, this is just...
Sorry, can I just ask about that? It's completely general.
Yeah, completely general. If you look at it...
You're not assuming anything about it.
Nothing. If you look at now, if you count degrees of freedom on both sides, you get exactly the same number of degrees of freedom. If you, for example, you have 10 degrees of freedom for your metric, and the same here, you have 3 degrees of freedom for A, 1 for Guillotin 4, and 6 for Gamma 10. And the number of gauge degrees of freedom is also the same. You have 3 gauges for Gamma, and you have 1 gauge for A, so 4. So this is completely general.
Since you got stuff. Earlier on, you were talking about compact objects, GM turned into R, or Schwarzschild radius. But the objects you're thinking of are, it's just any compact objects. It's not any necessarily a black hole. It's just
not,
something
yes.
where its physical size is of the order of
RS. RS okay. can be Schwarzschild radius for black hole and can be any other scale, I mean, some just geometrical size. So.
You actually do that integral?
No, no, because or in effective field theory actually happens the same. Once the theory is strongly coupled, you can't do any integral. We can do integral only perturbative and path integral. So
yeah, I think you can.
The integral?
Yeah. Thank you.
To get this action?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah. So pick the coordinates.
Ah?
Pick the right coordinates.
Radial coordinates?
No, the right coordinates.
Ah, the right coordinates?
Yeah.
But still, the action, I mean, Hilbert, Einstein Hilbert action is something extremely nonlinear. So.
No, but the only action you've integrated so far is for that action.
Yeah.
And what you've done here is to write down what could be a matter action over an extended body as a sequence of multiple approximations, multiple decomposition of the body, and you can truncate it to a mass. So I think in a sense, I mean, it's been done. Yeah.
Just to be this result, but it can be done.
Okay, but if it can be done, then I can fix, say exactly what the numbers
are,
coefficients are.
Yes, that's fair.
Okay, let's discuss.
Well, if you know the internal structure.
Yes, if you know the field equation, the matter field equation.
But I don't have any matter here.
Well, you've got the objects.
I mean, okay, but say these are two black holes. Two black holes.
Yeah, black holes.
So, but still, this will be the action. This is what I'm claiming. That this
right.
general for any objects, in particular for your black holes. Because if you are far enough, you see your black hole is just...
It's an effective description of black holes.
This is why I think in general is not possible.
Well, I said half the paper, then you used non-linearity to zero to get plus singularity.
Yes.
That's the project.
Yes.
Because you can replace them by delta functions.
Yes.
With the team in the this is how they derive the equations of motion with surface measurements.
Okay, but again, this delta, like, I mean, if you, in general, your object is not just one delta function, right? You have, in general, all kinds of corrections, including, say, derivatives of the delta function. If you take some exponential Gaussian, if you are far enough, then this Gaussian like delta function. But if you probe it on small distance, if you probe it on small distances, then you will realize that actually it's not like only delta function, but it has also all kinds of.
No, I still think it should be possible.
And then, in PKN formalism of Nordwendt invented it, you have a perfect fluid, TBU, right?
Okay.
And
I'm not
if you don't use singularity, it's all done with a TBU, the material solution. This is PPN, Will's book, Pleasure Will.
So.
Probably spending too much time.
Sorry, we're stopping you on unimportant things.
So this is after we apply this change of variables. This is the expression for d tau in terms of A and gamma. And now we see that A comes with 1 power of V and gamma comes with 2 powers of V. And it means that actually they will contribute, they will appear at later stages in post-Newtonian expansion. And the first guy to appear is just scalar potential of phi. And this is the bulk action, and the bulk action consists of two pieces. So this is the first piece that corresponds to exact bulk action within the stationary approximation. Namely, if we assume that our fields are time independent, then this is the only, this is a exact bulk action. But since the fields are really time dependent, then all the rest, I mean all the tails, can be treated as perturbation to the exact bulk, or to this exact bulk action. And this is one of the terms, I believe, the term treated as perturbation in the analysis, because as we showed, each time derivative carries 1 power of V. So, third step, we decompose our fields into two, namely the potential part and the radiation part, and we will neglect, as I said, radiation part for the rest of our discussion. And if we keep it, this, if we insist to keep this radiation mode, then we actually will reproduce terms in the Lagrangian which are responsible for the coupling of matter to the radiation. So now, and this integration can be done explicitly because now fields are big, and so we can treat perturbatively our path integral. And this is the bulk action, okay, within the weak field approximation. So this is just electromagnetic light part, and we have phi dot square, which will be treated as perturbation, and this is spare part of the. Okay, so and now we can read off Feynman diagram, Feynman rules. So this is just a propagator for the scalar field, and this delta function emphasizes that actually our propagation of the field, once you neglect time derivative, the propagation of the field is instantaneous. Okay, and for the A field, this is notation for the A field, and this term will be treated as bulk perturbation, and this is just
I'm a bit confused. You're saying you have a propagating a scalar field?
Yes.
But gravity doesn't have a propagating scalar. So
what do you mean doesn't have
a propagating? Well, scalar modes and gravity don't propagate.
It's not propagation in the same sense.
So it has a kinetic term.
Okay, when you again, when you have when you apply Talutz Klein reduction, usually you get Dillakon, right?
Well, I mean that I'm not gonna afford to
mention. It will not contribute to the radiation, I agree.
Yeah.
But it will contribute to the potential part of the
electron. It's just a Fourier transform of the Coulomb represented.
Yeah, but so you have.
So it's not propagation in the usual sense. It's
yes.
It's uniformly a propagator that describes the potential of the action.
Yeah, well, it looks like real propagation, but you have a kinetic term and you have a gradient term. So it looks like a standard dynamical scalar field.
Yeah, but again, if you include the coupling of radiation modes to the net, and if you decide to compute radiation, real radiation which is emitted from the system, then this part will not compute.
Somehow that kinetic term is real.
I think it's probably, have you specified a gauge at this point?
No. I didn't fix a gauge, neither for A. You see, this is still, okay, here, when I write down this expression for the propagator, I actually use Lorentz gauge for A.
Right.
But the gamma term, for example, you remember that gamma is coupled to 2 powers of phi. So it will not contribute to Einstein involvement at all. So I do not fix gauge fix.
Yeah, so it's not fully fixed, but I think it's an important factor that, you know, in the harmonic gauge, everything looks like propagating modes, but it's not like that.
Okay.
So I think that's probably why you see the usual kinetic
But this piece comes entirely from the Hitler time frame, this idle square. I did not, okay, once I compute this propagator, I indeed use Lorentz gauge. So I did not, but this part of the action, comes entirely from the Hilbert, Einstein Hilbert. I mean, I didn't introduce any gauge fixing geometry. Right.
So if you were to introduce a coupling with the between radiation and matter, would that be a massive star field? Or when would the equation that we obtain part of it?
Actually, the first continual coupling of the matter to the field, to your field modes, is a quadrupole of your system coupled to gammas, to R, to Ricci tensor of, or Kerch tensor of the terms of gamma.
Reynolds spin connection?
Huh?
Spin coupling connection then? Reynolds
spin, okay, I did not introduce any spin right now. In general, you introduce a spin, then you get extra terms. Just for spinless case, first on the coupling of matter to radiation mode will be just a quadrupole of the system coupled to Kerch tensor of in terms of gamma.
But before radiation, though, you phi couples in your mass.
Yes.
I'm not sure what Luis was thinking. I thought that's where he would.
Okay.
Go back.
Here, right. Yes, here you expand the mass is coupled to phi.
So, in some sense, that's a leading coupling.
Yes, leading coupling is a mass. I will show you.
Yeah.
What happened to the e to the phi?
E to the phi? Okay, I did not still show. It will appear. I just considered only bulk action. I consider it. Let me continue. We will see. I hope. No. So this is the bulk action and propagators. And this is a point particle part. Expansion of the point particle part in weak field. So e to the phi, first leading correction is just phi, and we have also phi square, and we have also all kinds of terms. So I just throw down only those terms which will be relevant to instant Einstein, but the procedure is clear, just Taylor expansion is part. And we associate picture with each component in this action. So this is coupling of mass. Okay, double line represents here warp line of our body, and this is a picture of phi coupled to the mass. So this vertex corresponds to the mass. Okay. Now next vertex for this is just the 4a, and we have to keep in mind that the there is one power of V here in the vertex. And we have also the same vertex like this one, but with V square correction. And with phi square, we associate a double line connection. I mean, too late. So integrating potential modes means to sum all diagrams with internal lines associated with only these phi A fields, okay, and gamma in general, but for Einstein, gamma doesn't contribute. So to leading order, we have just this H diagram. I think this is the potential, this is what you mentioned, that if there is an exchange of phi, then we get the standard, this is Newtonian potential, mv squared, this is kinetic term from the expansion of the tau, and we have this leading diagram, H diagram, it's just Newtonian potential. Okay, how you can see it, if you recall the form of the propagator, so you have d3k over k squared. So d3k over k squared, once you fully transform it, you get 1 over r. Up to constants, you have M1 times M2 times 1 over R, and constants arrange exactly for GMM over R.
So here you're already throwing away the self-fields.
Actually, there are, I mean, such contributions with with this line closed on the same clip. Right. So in dimensional, okay, actually all these integrals diverge. In dimensional, we use dimensional regularization. So in dimensional regularization, such a contribution when you close this line on this on the log line is exactly zero. Okay, you can use sharp cutoff. I mean, regularize your integral with some cutoff. Then we get some piece which is cutoff dependent. And actually, what you can do, you can redefine your mass. Since after all, this mass parameter is arbitrary. It's like bare parameter in the field theory. So you can hide all these cutoff dependent pieces into the definition of mass. But this is why, at least I personally like dimensional regularization, because then you have all these power-like divergences are just vanish, zero. Now, and we can construct these four diagrams from these pieces. I think four diagrams, each such diagram is sublinear if you compare it to the Newtonian diagram. For example, this diagram contains this piece of V square in the vertex. This diagram contains, recall that we have V in the vertex from the coupling of A, so we have V square again. And this diagram has V square because in the bulk we have time derivative, and each time derivative carries 1 power of V, so we have V square relative, extra V square relative to the Newtonian diagram. And therefore, they reveal 1 PN correction to the Newtonian potential. And this piece is also 1 PN correction to the Newtonian one diagram because we have extra propagator here. And by what real theory, extra propagator scales as V square. So we get still V square correction relative to the Newtonian potential.
Misha, how do you know that the term with A is higher order?
Term is A?
Yeah.
Because you see explicitly A vertex comes with V, right?
But A was, I mean, you introduced it to a change of variables.
Yes.
You have change of variables where A was huge, small. I mean, so at some point you're putting some physics into A. What is that kind of?
Okay, I mean, when you look at the answers, then actually you don't know if about this kind of coupling of A to V, but when you look at the form of detail, you see explicitly that H mu nu couples to X dot nu, right? H nu, I mean, you have G mu nu, V mu, V nu in detail. So you know that special part of your detail will be coupled to 2 powers of V. I mean, just from looking at the explicit form.
But there's much more than that, right? Because your expressions for the propagators involve, I mean, your redundant propagators you have because you know that phi goes as 1 over r because you've solved the field equations for phi.
Yes.
Implicitly, and same for a.
Yes, but
right, so you are putting in the field equations.
Yeah, but in the case, all propagators. All propagators will scale as 1 over r, I mean, because...
Right, but that's information that comes from the field equation.
From the field equation, yeah. Okay, in the classical level, what we are doing here, I mean, on the level of equations, we solve for a given motion of our sources, we solve for field equations, and then we substitute the solution into the equations for our particles. But this is a kind of... if you do it on the level at the level of field equations, you work hard, actually. At the level of action, you economize your computation because you don't need to solve, substitute, and solve again. You just work with the action, so you get everything at once.
Just getting back to your beginning, if you take Einstein's field equations, a weak field at small velocities, you get equations that just look like electromagnetic. Potential A9 and phi. This was published by Einstein in his book, Meaning of Relativity. A long time ago, the 20s.
I see. Einstein's Hoffman potential, after all, was derived 70 years ago. So I do not claim that here I produce some new results. This is why it's called the Einstein-Infeld-Boltzmann, not Misha's fault. So I just want to show that actually, if you look at the paper of Weinstein from that time, it took several, about 30 pages of calculations, not 30, but a lot of pages of computation.
Who did?
Einstein.
Oh, Einstein.
Infeld and Hoffman, yes.
Yeah.
An original paper. And here you can reproduce the same result just in one line. I mean, each diagram, one line, exactly. And I can show it on the blackboard. You can compute it in one line.
Wow.
So just let me finish. So this, so I use some known result, reproduce some known result to show you the efficiency of the approach. But actually you can use this tool to compute something which is less known. Okay? For example, recently some progress was done in computing higher order post-Antonian corrections, and these corrections are important because all these detectors are underway. So I personally do not understand why we have all these Olympic games in computing the post-Newtonian orders.
That would be fun.
But still,
I agree with you. The calculations in Einstein and Hoffman are not in a vault of the institute, by the way. They're locked away. It's a huge calculation. But there's a book by Unfeld and Babansky. Infeld argued with Einstein for years because he used delta functions. But he could do Einstein and Hoffman in about 3 pages using just delta functions. There are papers, there's a book by Infeld that does it. Einstein didn't like it. There's a whole history attached to this thing.
Okay, let me finish because after all this is.
If you have something new, then I'm sorry I interrupted.
So these are 4 diagrams, and this is a Newtonian action, this is Einstein-Infeld-Boltzmann action. Actually, once you draw the Feynman diagrams, this interpretation, the physics is pretty clear. So here, for example, we have kinetic energy gravitates in GR and creates potential, and this is interaction of kinetic energy via gravitational field with second particle. Here we have this electromagnetic light field, so here we have Biot-Savart law. Okay, moving particles create a kind of gravitomagnetic potential exchange, and this creates force. And here we have a retardation effect that signals propagate with finite speed. And here we have an example of actually potential energy. If you just remove one layer, you get Newtonian potential. So we have Newtonian potential is also energy. So it gravitates, and this is a correction due to gravitation of the.
What is this one with the circle cross?
Bald Kern phi dot square associated with phi dot square. So with 2 time derivatives. So if your fields are time independent, then there is no such term. Okay, but once there is time dependence, even though it is weak, you have to take it into account and at some level of your approximation. So first post-Newtonian correction already contains one such term.
So you're saying if you sum all these, you get an actual finite retardation?
Yes, right, then right. Okay, you can see it as follows. Usually your propagator looks as 1 over k squared plus k zero squared. Now take k squared outside, so you get k squared times 1 minus k zero over k squared. And k zero, it is much less than k. This is exactly the situation. You can expand. They will expand this 1 over 1 minus k zero over k, and so you get series. Your propagator looks as series in k zero square, and each k zero is associated with 1 time derivative. So exactly, if you sum all these terms, you get propagator, full propagator. Okay, and in Einstein, Infeld, Hofmann, Lagrangian, we have these four terms, and each term is associated exactly with one diagonal. Okay, so in this, this is why I called this kind of derivation most economizing one, because with each diagram, with each physical process, there is an associated term. Okay, so this is all terms collected together, and if you do not use this kind of dimensional reduction, then actually, and you work only in terms of H's, then you get the extra diagram and which you have to compute, and this demonstrates the advantage of this kind of change of
variables. I'm not sure I understand that, because this is just a change of variables.
Right, but
it contains no real content, so I'm still thinking that you've imposed the gauge condition.
No,
that's
no. Yeah. Okay. Let me postpone. I will. We can talk about it later. I just want to talk about the main topic. I think finance side effects.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So let me start.
I mean, an important thing is
okay. So let me. Let me, before I consider these finite size effects in this post-Newtonian framework, let us consider very simple model, just celebrated pi to the fourth, so we have pi square minus lambda over 4 factorial pi fourth, and we have, say, one, some, the Lagrangian source, and to be specific, this source is precise Gaussian, very simple Gaussian form by C halves R S Q X minus R over R S squared. Okay. So R S now is a typical size of our source. And the problem is also we consider it static. Consider static problem.
Is this an analogy you're doing now? What is this? Is this just illustrating the method in a simple?
Yeah, I want to illustrate. I want now to consider some other effects, such as RG flow, classical RG flow. Once we studied in the framework of quantum field theory, at least this is my association, that RG flow is something which is related to quantum physics and completely unrelated to classical physics. And in fact, if you open any book, any Perskin, I don't know, Ryder, there are no examples, Weinberg, there are no examples, classical examples of renormalization procedure in classical physics. And after all, not only I, mean, for example, Rothstein and Gottbregel claim that this procedure of RG flow is not special for quantum physics. It equally well applied for classical setups. And this is what I want to state some very simple example to show you that you need to get classical RG flow. Okay, this is the goal. And I want to also to demonstrate what the meaning of a removable operator. What does it mean, removable operator? And once I'm done here, I will demonstrate how all this strategy can be applied for finite size effects in the context of post-quantum physics. So. So we can solve it exactly. Maybe now Neil will tell that he knows how. we want to solve this perturbatively in lambda. Okay? Perturbatively in lambda. So classical procedure is clear. Now, this effective field theory says that if we want to find our field at the asymptotics, then let us integrate out short degrees of freedom, RS, and replace this Lagrangian by EFT Lagrangian, effective field theory Lagrangian, which has the same bound structure, E phi square, like Einstein-Hilbert, minus lambda over 4 factorial phi fourth, and we replace this source by delta-like sources. So the leading order we get minus the G0, okay, G0 or D tau, phi, okay, And actually, we have to introduce a lot of infinite power of other operators. So let us consider the following operator, which is implicit. Following operator. Now, first claim that this operator is immovable. That is, if I apply field redefinition, I can remove it. And this is a field redefinition. If I send my field phi to phi plus some psi delta function, x minus x t, okay, my x t now corresponds to a given motion of our source, but our source is stuck. So this is just delta 4. I mean, redefinition which is concentrated on the world life of the, our object. Okay? So once we do such redefinition, okay, so let us see what happens with the bulk term. So bulk term, if I, so bulk term d phi square goes to twice, yeah, I can just by integration by parts get integral of minus integral of phi box phi. Okay. And once we substitute this redefinition, okay, we get extra piece. Okay, because delta function kills all the integral x tau, okay, x mu of tau. So delta function kills all the integral except one which is concentrated along the warp line, right? This is by definition of the definition. So we get piece which looks exactly like this one. Okay? Because
you, do you see it?
Yes. I think it's okay, so we get some contains some psi integral of box phi d tau. Okay. So by the appropriate adjustment of psi, I can just remove this operator. Okay. And in general, we say that if there is some operator which is proportional to leading order equations of motion, after all, this is box phi equation of motion, then by appropriate field redefinition, we can remove such operator. This is all.
And what about the delta square?
Yeah, we left that.
Okay. Actually, you're right. For example, I get some from here. I get some phi q, say terms. Okay, phi q terms. But recall that here we actually have infinite number of other operators. So what it means that I remove one operator and I redefine constants of other operators.
But that's perturbative lambda. I think what they're more worried about is it in the kinetic term. Mm-hmm. There is a contribution psi squared.
Okay, but I think about this psi as a small parameter. Okay, so psi squared is a kind of a neglect of stuff. Okay. This is delta phi goes to phi plus psi.
I don't see where the psi squared comes from.
Huh?
Well, it's grad phi squared in the edge.
Yeah, but if, but depending on the integration by phi, you get phi max phi. Phi has two terms in it there.
Yeah, but you have now to substitute phi goes to phi plus delta phi. Okay, box phi plus delta phi.
Okay,
so you have delta phi box delta phi, this is what you mean, right? And, okay, but these are, I think about this redefinition as some small shift, okay, some, so I take on the linear part.
But wouldn't that mean that if you want to go to the second order or not?
If I go beyond first linear approximation, yeah, I think I have to say, but it can be just, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer it just right now.
I think but I can agree to give you all possible license with respect to rigor.
I mean, after all. What I wanted to say is that actually you have some operators which are proportional to equations of motion, then by field redefinition you can remove this. Okay, at the same time you redefine other coefficients, but you can remove. These are called redundant operators. Okay. So in the case, for example, of GR, you can if we consider terms beyond master, beyond M vital term, you can say, okay, the first trivial, the first non-trivial one, which respects general covariance, etc., is say R vital, right? Or another one looks like C V R mu nu x dot mu x dot nu, okay? But these operators are proportional to the leading order equations of motion. So by the same sort of procedure, you can remove them up to deltas.
But just to understand, you're saying your field theory definition is small, but did you tell me that C had to be small? Because if C is not small, then there's a tension. Is C suppressed in your perturbative?
Since after all, this effective field theory is valid on big, large scales, right? So we are far enough from the system. So it means it's asymptotic somewhere, the asymptotics like in the post-Newtonian case. So these C's are supposed to be small.
And what's the parameter?
The parameter here?
Yeah.
It scales with RS. I mean, because you integrate it out short degrees of freedom.
Okay.
So these coefficients depend on RS. Okay.
So by thinking this n vital plus this one, like we should be looking at the multiple moments. This is not the multiple moment.
This one, this? Okay, still there. You see, decoupling statement says that you have to take all operators which are consistent with your symmetry, or for the full symmetry. Okay, this is the statement, decoupling state. So actually, when you look at them, they respect all the symmetries of the full theory. They are fine. So if you drop these terms, then you have to somehow justify why you drop them. So it turns out that they are proportional to equations of motion, so you can remove them by field definition. And indeed, the next term is just this kind of wonderful.
So the terms which you cannot remove by the field
definition
are the ones any generally can be scaled anyway, like as the multiple moment approximation. First term from the point particle.
Yes, the first term will be wonderful term. I will write. So
I understand that point. You're saying C is now a dimensionful parameter, it scales with RS.
Yes.
But that term is suppressed by RS divided by the scale on which phi is there. Is that right?
Okay, this term, yes, is suppressed by, you have some big scale, and where, I don't know.
But that's the scale that's coming out of the box.
Right. Because now, since these fields correspond to big scale already, I mean big scale in comparison to this RS. So this scale comes from the box.
Okay.
Yeah, because now box phi scales as one over this the corresponding scale. So now I want to show you RG flow. Okay. So if I want to solve it perturbatively in lambda, well, I said that you know how to integrate this. So so if you solve it perturbatively in lambda, it means that actually you at each level, at each order in lambda, you dress your sort. So for example, to leading order, to zero sort in lambda, your source is just this G0 D tau phi. This is a leading order source. And once you want to introduce lambda into the game, you have to correct your source. Actually, you want to compute all diagrams with one or term, linear term in the action, linear in phi. Okay. So to linear order, you get only this diagram. This is G0. Okay. But next to leading order in lambda, you have to compute this diagram. Yeah, this is given motion, ground line of our source, just a straight line. Okay, no propagators are associated with this double, with the double line, so if you strip off, you get just three-level diagram. Okay. Now, this diagram, if you compute it in Fourier space, say this is U, this, say this is K, so U, P, and here we get U plus P plus K. So this diagram is G0 cube lambda, and here we have three integrals, G3K phi of K, and you have G3P, three because we are in the static case, G3P is Q over 2 pi 6, which is by Q, be precise, and we have 1 over P squared, Q squared, and here we have P plus Q, Q plus P plus K squared, and the precise numeric factor is 6, is just a simple factor of the diagram. Okay, this is the result, and you can it now just name counting shows that it logarithmically diverges. This integral. We have P to P6 here, and 6 part of the power 6 here. So if this is logarithmically diverges, this diagram, and it means in quantum field theory you say, okay, you have to introduce counter term in order to get rid of these divergences. Okay. Once you introduce counter term, you will get Archy flow. So in particular, the result. So the result of this diagram. And just divergence of this diagram has the following structure. I will show you what how counter term looks like, and the divergence is just minus counter term, so minus g cube lambda over 4 pi square 1 over epsilon. Okay, and I included also some finite part just for you. Okay, so this is the counter. Okay, this is finite size, finite subtraction, so you can remove it. So this term exactly cancels divergence which comes from this term. Okay, and if you combine this vertex with this counter term, you get a redefinition of your G0. Standard procedure in quantum field theory, actually G0 get the following form, G times L minus epsilon, where epsilon is exactly like in quantum field theory, 4 minus D, and G0 is defined to be G times L minus epsilon, okay? And so you get this expression, times 1 plus G square lambda over 12, 4 pi square, times 1 over epsilon, finite subtraction. We should just review it. Okay, so this is your new parameter, Weyl parameter. And now, since this Weyl parameter in quantum field theory, we say that the wording is the following. We say that G0 knows nothing about scale. In this case, scale is L. Okay, L is length scale now, not energy scale, like in quantum field theory. So it knows nothing about L, so it means that D G0 D log L has to be precisely 0. Okay, you require, and you get a beta function for your G. And the beta function, I mean, in this case, you get the beta function equals to G minus G cube lambda over 96 pi squared. Okay, this is a beta function. In this case, no, but I will derive it in classical way. I mean, you can derive it classically. Yeah.
This is a joint classical, because if you take that Lagrangian, it's done in the writer's book. Take that Lagrangian path into performalism, iterate all the finite diagrams, and it's renormalizable. In fact, so why? What's different?
It's renormalizable. I mean.
We know that lambda 5 to 4 is renormalized.
Yeah, right, but once you consider classical Lagrangian, you don't need to say these words, renormalization, because you do not consider any loops. Now, why it runs here? Why it runs in effective field theory? Because in effective field theory, you take some Lagrangian, which describes approximately your full theory. And that means that, for example, if you adjust, if you want both field velocity or classical solution to agree with your effective field theory solution, it means that once you approach your object, okay, you have to adjust appropriately your parameters, your effective parameters like G0. G0 is not originally is not introduced in the full theory, just some coupling in the effective field theory. So in order to for both theories to agree, you have to adjust your effective couplings as you probe your theory at different scales. And this is the origin for this RG flow. Actually, it is, in classical physics, nothing flows. I mean, in full theory.
How do you get RG flow from a purely tree graph theory?
It's not a tree, you have loops here.
Yeah, you have.
So why do you say this is
classical? How do you say it's classical?
Okay, if you have just standard source in J, like J in this colorful theory, then usually this is what you draw. This is a three-level diagram. Is it three-level diagram?
This is a three-level.
This is three-level. So this is exactly the same. Well, okay, I would use this notation. Why I insist to use this notation? Because usually you say your source is smeared over the whole space time, right? This is bulk source, and this points run over all the bulk. Okay. In our case, you have point-like source, and this is actually the origin for all these RG flows. You have some idealization. You take our source, our Gaussian, and think about it as a point. So once you do it, you get divergences. But actually, there are no divergences in the full theory. And basically, this is the diagram which I consider. I do not associate propagator with this line. You see it explicitly here. I write propagator for this line, for this line, for this line, but I do not consider propagator for this line. Therefore, it is completely classical, completely. Nothing, no quantum loops. In quantum loop, you have propagators for all the lines in the loop.
Yeah.
So this is completely classical. And again, you got divergences only because you take your Gaussian source and you think about it as point-like. Okay. And so our sources, sometimes people complain you do not have singular, you do not like singular sources in GR. So that's right, okay, nothing, there is no contradiction. We just, what we do here, we just idealize our source. So any regular function, say Gaussian, this is our lovely function in physics. So what we do here, we say, okay, if you are far enough, if your scales are big, then your Gaussian is approximately delta function. Okay? It's good. I mean, if you probe it with functions, which is a huge spread, then you can approximately say, okay, my Gaussian is delta function. Once you want to improve your precision, you have to include other terms in your expansion, delta prime, I don't know, delta, derivative of delta function. Okay, so this divergence here we get just due to idealization, because we take our source and we think about it as point-like. So we get divergences. So but this kind of divergences are exactly of the same nature as in quantum field theory. In quantum field theory, you have point-like interactions, and you get divergences. This is all these pictures in Polchinski's book. That string theory blows up interactions, so we have less problems. But actually, the origin of divergence in quantum field theory are exactly the same, point-like objects, point-like interactions. Now,
can I just ask you, I mean, you're saying this is because I took an extended source and made it point-like.
Yes.
The RG flow, it still doesn't know anything about RS or some hidden scale. It seems it's coming from the non-linearity, so I don't...
No, if you do the same computation, but this source, for example, you can think about this diagram
right
in the framework of full theory, where this X corresponds to this row. Okay? The same diagram, but here now you replace point object by some object by Gaussian.
Sure.
Okay, I claim that you will not get this ultraviolet air
quality. RS will be a UV cut.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So you're saying I'm going to use that, I'm going to use, somehow when I stick the source in, there's a normalization point where I'm fixing G.
Yes, I will show it now. Let me proceed. And I will show you the normalization point, okay? So you get, now I don't want to use this quantum field theory language. We want to be in the classical framework only. Therefore, we take what we can compute on both sides. We can compute, say, value of the field as asymptotics on the effective field theory side and on the full theory side, okay? And compare. Because once I have two Lagrangians, I can compute. After all, this is the aim, this is the goal, to compute the value of the field and on both sides, and then we want to measure. We want to say that these fields have to equal. Okay, so on the effective field theory side, I have to use my normalized Lagrangian EFT, gets the following form, minus G integral E3K over 2 pi Q, phi K. Actually, this is just in the position space, just phi evaluated at the location of the source, phi 0, okay, plus lambda g q over, 4 pi square, d3k over 2 pi q. I mean, this is the source, okay, actually. This is the source, this is our source, now, corrected source, I mean, to linear with lambda, phi k, log of KL squared. Log of KL, KL squared in the log. And this is the corrected result. I mean, you expand, you get logs. Okay, I did not, I mean, do you agree?
I forgot what L was.
L is some scale here. It was introduced here. Okay. I define G. G0 has dimensions of G0.
Okay.
Is L to D minus. In four dimensions. In four dimensions, G0 has precisely scale of, as the dimension of lambs. Okay, so I define, this is the way to define this G. Okay. So that is when you, after all, in dimensional representation, we expand around D equals 4. So this G now has correct dimension in four dimensions.
Yeah.
In the one. And this is the scale, and how log appears, you have this term, okay? And you expand it about d equals 4. And you substitute here g times l minus l to minus 3, I mean minus q. And the lambda is the same. And now you compute this integral in general d. And then you substitute this d equals epsilon equals 4 minus d. You expand in epsilon this integral. Okay, and you get logs. Okay, this is standard. If you have some pole, you always get also logs. Okay. So this is, and once you introduce this counter term, this is the effective action, effective field theory action, renormalized effective field theory action, or renormalized source. Now you can use this source to derive, to get an expression, asymptotic expression for phi. Just, this is a source for phi, so I just plug propagator, and I compute phi as asymptotics. Okay, so in the result, phi EFT equals, the result is minus G over 4 pi R plus GQ lambda over 6, 4 pi Q. And here we have log of R over L over So this L is associated with some asymptotic scale. Now, so this is the effective field theory result, but we can use just our classical full theory and compute the same on the classical side. Evaluate phi full. Okay, so phi full turns out, this is why I said that there are no divergences in the full theory, because I computed, when you compute the same kind of integral, but this Gaussian-like source, and no divergences. So phi full gets the form for minus g bar. G bar is introduced in the source. Okay? Minus g bar over 4 pi r plus g bar cube lambda over 6 4 pi cube. This is precise result when you compute it on the full theory side. Over r, okay? This is precise result on the full theory side. And now you require that these both theories agree, namely phi full equals to phi EFT. And this fixes your G. Okay, now, in particular, you require...
Fixes capital L also.
Huh? Here, there's capital L, because
there's log of R over L.
Yeah, here
you have R over RS.
Right. This means?
Doesn't that mean RS is L?
No. This means that this tells you about G, how the relation between G and G bar. What we have done. Precise expression. So you get G of L equals to G bar plus G bar Q lambda over 6 times 4 pi square and log of RS over L. Okay? This is what it means. And now you can derive beta function again. You can differentiate G with respect to log L and you can reproduce the same beta function which you can derive just from the quantum field theory. Like discussion. G0 has to be scale independent and you get beta function Zeigler actually. And now, observation which has to be done. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm running out of time.
I think you should try to wrap up because there is another meeting.
Okay. I just wanted to show you how to actually, this same coefficients in the effective field theory. On the effective field theory in case of gravity, okay, they also build some like coefficients, so they might start running. And I wanted to show you that there are some special dimensions where this running is associated with, say, quadruple terms, okay? And actually, we checked it. You can do exactly the same kind of computation on the GR side. It means that you compute perturbations around Schwarzschild. So we have the really Reggie-Miller equations and so on. So we can solve them in static limit. The really equation can be solved pretty exactly. So this is an analog, in the really case, this is an analog of this phi full. Okay, and you can compute the same on the effective field theory side, and then you can compare. Now, so we did it, and now you have to know that actually coefficient in front of the log is the same, and I mean the same on the full theory side and on the effective field theory side. That is, you don't need to reproduce coefficient in front of the log. You don't need to use even matching. This has to be the same as in full series on the full theory side. It has to be the same. And so you solve your Zerilli equation and you expand it near the infinity. So it turns out actually that interesting dimensions are 4, 5, and 7. So if you expand the real solution in 4 and 5, you will realize that there are no logs in the full, you know, on the full theory side. No logs there. But in 7 dimensions, log appears. And once you compare log coefficient on the effective field theory side with log coefficient on the full theory side, when you expand the real equation, they agree exactly the same. This is why this is still in progress, because when we compare it, actually, these solutions, full solution and effective field theory solution, must agree not only, I mean, the coefficients must agree not only in front log, but all the coefficients. And we have some mismatch in other coefficients still. Okay, and it has to do with actually with gauge choice. Because in the case of gravity, things are much more involved. You have to introduce background field, then you have to gauge fix background, you have to gauge fix your perturbation, you have to gauge fix your effective field theory. And at the end, I mean, all this gauge, I mean, you have to somehow find agree between all these gauges. So, and this is the main obstacle to words who mentioned.
Getting back to what I said originally, if you take Einstein's field equations, weak fields, you get Maxwell's equations for small velocities. If you take Maxwell's equations and take small, slowly moving charges, that's what you get. But you lose Maxwell's theory, you don't have gauge invariants. This has been going a long time. So we were talking about.
This is standard in GR. Once you do something, if this is the kind of rule. Well, somebody always did it something.
So I'm confused about, you don't get Maxwell's equations. You only get them for very slowly moving particle charge.
Yes, that's right. I agree. So I do not claim that Maxwell action.
This is Maxwell. Published this stuff. So, but now you're doing quantum field theory, okay? And if you do, not scalar theory, but gauge theories, you can't use classical theory. Because you lose the gauge invariants if you do this extended source thing.
But this is only tree level.
But
it's only tree level, right? So it's really classical.
Yeah.
It's just using the techniques of quantum field
theory. Yeah, I do not use something. Everything, as I told from the very beginning, all what is done here right now is just purely classical. No quantum loops, no Heisenberg uncertainty relation, nothing. Just pure classical treatment. Maybe wording is borrowed from quantum fields.
Why do I bother to quantum field theory to study one calculation?
Because sometimes, you know, in a quantum field theory, we do not know to solve many things. I mean, we know to solve perturbation.
What do I learn from doing this?
You learn some new tools, perturbative tools, which are very well developed in quantum field theory context. Okay, so you use these tools, only machinery, to make your computations in GR efficient, more efficient, or and even maybe. At least I believe that it will enable us to compute extra new stuff which we couldn't compute by using, say, traditional Excel GR. Okay. Because this is I think, the theoretical physics you always want
to find.
New tools to compute things.
You computed this new stuff.
So, right now, as I said, we have some success, in, for example, in finite size coefficients. There are, recently we have, if you check, for example, NARCA, you will find a lot of publications, many publications, publications about the finite size effects. Because after all, these finite size coefficients are model dependent. So once we detect some signals from the object, if we, say, compare this finite size, data with this computation, we will be able to say if we are dealing with the black hole or with neutron star, because this C will be different for different objects.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, let him summarize. People may have more questions.
Okay, so I think it's a good point to keep. I have a list of kind of
open. Can I ask just a question like this? Yeah. When you went from the original theory, the exact one, to this effective field theory, you lost a bit of information, right? You lost, in the original source, you had R0 and you had G bar, I think.
RS.
And G bar. Whereas here you have some running compensation, but you don't know the value of L. So, I mean, if
L is running
you don't know the value of G, let's say.
Okay. Sorry,
right. So in quantum fields,
in effective field theory, these coefficients are unknown.
That's right.
Okay. And you fix them by matching to the precise theory. This is what you do in quantum field theory.
That's right, and then you fix it to
your experiment.
But suppose you had a model of a neutron star or something like that.
Yes.
It's not just a question of fixing some.
Yeah,
the neutron star is very complicated. You really want to match it to some description that you have of the neutron star.
Then you have to use some precise model of your neutron star.
I agree, you can do this, but I'm just saying you've lost some information.
Yeah, in an assumption which I think is compatible with.
You're talking
about here. So to leading order, you're interested in the distortion in the neutron star or the black hole that's created by the type of forces created by the other bodies. And you know that the effect associated with this is going to be a quadrupole effect that basically is reducible to the determination of one number, which is called the Love number.
Yes,
and that describes the deformation of the body relative to a circle configuration. There's been a lot of recent work on this.
Yes, and so again, when I'm talking about matching this G, in GR, I'm talking about this coefficient. We have in GR, so R and R mu nu are redundant, as you said. Originally, by the way, Goldberger and Rostam did not notice it, so they found some argiflow associated with these unphysical operators. And then Damour pointed out that actually these operators are not physical. And then Goldberger and Rothstein, when they reposted their paper, they showed how these operators can be removed in the framework of effective fields. This is a history. But the next non-trivial operator to consider has to do with E alpha beta, E alpha beta integral. Okay? So this C. And E alpha beta, okay, there is also magnetic light from E alpha beta, but in the static limit. So E alpha beta is R alpha gamma beta delta times X dot gamma X dot delta.
Okay. Right, and so, that C, or dimensionless version of this, is what I was talking about. That's the Love number for your compact body.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm sure you're aware of all the recent work that's been done on this.
This is why I told that there is a lot of activity in this direction.
Yeah. Okay. But what's interesting to me is that, so you have this word line operator expansion where you basically insert operators that are suppressed by increasing powers of the coupling length. But you also have this idea, and I think you were raising this point before, where you can think of T mu nu as being expressed as a multiple expansion where to leading order you have the mass delta term. Then you have a mass dipole delta prime term, and that to get rid of by choosing the center of mass appropriate. Mm-hmm. And then you have the next term, which is a quadrupole delta prime prime term. And I think, you know, that term has to be reducible to this by doing integration.
Yes,
by parts.
I think if after all, we are talking about this, the same thing. I mean,
right. But I know you like to use all the fancy language of quantum field theory.
Because this is the power. I mean, once you draw all these diagrams. Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of self-consistent way, right? You have to, for example, you want to consider your perturbative expansion, you just have to write down, first of all, you have rules, and then you have, you know how to associate a small parameter with each diagram, and then you have just to write down the whole list of diagrams which contribute to definite order, and then you just compute them, and you get the result, this kind of self-consistent way. Mm-hmm. And you have also self-consistent regularization procedure. You have well-developed, I mean, in quantum field theory, this is what people do all the time, and when the kind of regularization stuff. So I guess in GR, why people, I mean, it is natural to take something which is already well-developed, right, and to use it, just to use it, rather than invent something new.
Right. Well, if we were, you know, 50 years ago, maybe people would have realized that this is the way to do it and started to do it your way. But they started and they were silly and they did something else instead. And now we're 50 years later and there's a lot of built-in formulas and ready to be used.
Okay, but after all of us are interested, you know, to compute, to know what is real physics, right? So
it doesn't matter what kind of tool you use. The important thing is to get new results.
In 1969, the Shanzhou Center published a paper on astrophysical China. He did PPN in all its glory. And if you follow that, why would you get anything less than you can?
No, but the important thing is that those orders were there. They were set coefficients that were not calculated because they were a mess. And they came when the Porto and Rothman came and they computed first the spin-spin interaction of the two-body binary before the standard machinery did it. After 3 months, the I group came and did it. But that was perhaps a tantalizing signal that maybe this is an approach that we have a cleaner way to get the answer. I mean, the jury is still out because they did one first. Well, no, everything after that becomes more complicated.
And there's one issue that I think has to be understood. It's the fact that, you know, you can calculate one thing, but in order to, so, okay, well, what I really want to say is that, for example, you can calculate an additional term in the equations of motion, and that's good, and that's interesting, and that can have some impact. But if you have only the equations of motion, you have not enough to really turn that into an operational question with a well-posed, unique answer. You need the equations of motion and the metric to be able to interpret what the equations of motion mean. And for waveforms, well, you need the metric in the wave zone so that you can extract the waves and get something which is, you know, well-posed gauge invariant and correspond to the observable.
Yeah, but for example, in this EFT approach, once you have the Lagrangian, you can you can also compute the metric. I mean, asymptotic
right. Value. And that's what I tend to hear from, you know, people doing this sort of thing. You can do it all. We just haven't done it yet. and, you know, there's a chance that somewhere along the way you're going to face a hard calculation that would be equivalent to the type of hard calculations that post-syntonic people have been dealing with. So I think, you know, this is very appealing. I think it's very good in terms of organizing calculations, but it doesn't mean that in the end it's all going to be easy.
Eric, how have we heard from the PN side saying we can do it all?
if you mean one person in particular.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one person.
So what was your answer to my question? Is that all the, so to speak, microscopic physics and the transfer is condensed into the one computing as one number as a lot of numbers?
Well, to lead in order in the type of distortion.
To
the next level, you have more computers and have eventually run with the merger scenario where it all breaks.
Yeah,
sure. One thing you cannot capture here is the viscosity, for example. Because of the
actual principle.
That's what I think. You can, if you have an accident, so the viscosity generally turns the orbital energy into thermal energy, which leads to synchronized.
No, but these guys.
Okay, but.
So Goldberger and.
Yes,
Rusty,
they introduced. Yes. There is also a way to introduce dissipation effects into this approach. Okay, for Goldberger and Rothstein originally did it just for spinless objects, and then Porto, so Raphael Porto, generalized it to the case. When you have also spin, there is a lot of work to do to improve the spin formalism, I guess.
But you're saying there is a way to include this equation in the action?
Yes, there is a way.
Mm-hmm. That's a problem. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there are no more questions, then let's thank Kushana.